You're listening to the Creepcast on DownrightCreepy.com. Here's your creepy hosts.
Welcome to the Creepcast. I am Casey Canton. On today's show, we have our contributor Lex speaking to the directors and writers of Scare Package 2, Rad Chad's Revenge, which is actually out now on Blu-ray. It came out April 11th. We're going to hear from Aaron Kuntz from Paper Street Productions. He has Artifice Girl and Trim Season also out right now, which just screened at Panic Fest, our film festival here in Kansas City. For Jed Shepard, you remember him probably from his breakout film, The Host, or Host, I should say, that came out on Shudder during COVID. It was a fantastic film and a great concept. His contributions to Scare Package 2 include director credits and writing credits on the segment Special Edition. So let's take a listen to Lex and the guys from Scare Package 2.
Gotcha. Can I just say, Aaron, like, congrats on such a gory, funny, passionate celebration of horror. It was such a blast to watch. So I'm super excited to talk to you too. Thank you again for speaking with me. So I guess my first question for you, Aaron, is, you know, as the creative force behind Scare Package, you know, what was it like to return for part two?
It was wild. It was definitely something that we did not expect would ever happen. Mm-hmm. And it was just, but we had all these filmmakers that we wanted to work with from the first film that we didn't get a chance to. So it's like, oh my God, we get to do this again, you know? And I love producing for other people, and we produce a lot of movies, but I'm also a writer director, probably first at heart. So it's this nice amalgamation of everything where I get to watch and work with these wonderfully talented individuals and see how they work and how they work within this weird sandbox we've created, and then also kind of fit that within this bigger thing that I'm trying to make as well as a writer director. So it's just a really special, it's, you know, again, we make a lot of movies, but this one is so near and dear to my heart because none of the other movies would exist if it wasn't for Scare Package. Like, this was a movie that was created out of some frustration in the industry and like feeling like, I don't know what I'm doing. And like, is anybody gonna actually watch this? And, you know, we just made something with our friends and we're like, let's just throw blood around. Let's just have fun. And I don't know what's going to happen. We're probably going to lose all our money, but let's see what happens. And then all of a sudden it becomes a hit. And now people have tattoos and they dress up in Halloween and, you know, and it's like this surreal thing. And it's just been a wonderful, wonderful ride, you know, and we have a motto at Paper Street that's like horror with heart. And I think it started out of Scare Package and just this idea that like you can have fun with it and it can be hopefully an escape, you know. Mm-hmm. The first one came out in June of 2020 and so much in the world that was going on that was like angering a lot of us, scaring a lot of us, so many different things that we're trying to kind of wrestle with. And it was like, okay, maybe for 90 minutes, you can just watch the dumbest shit, you know, and just laugh and escape. And I think that was what we were so glad to get to come back and try and do that again.
Yeah. And you can so tell how much fun you had, which I think is among many highlights, one of the biggest highlights for me, because, you know, you have this amazing, you know, blend of comedy and horror, and it just balances so perfectly with all the guts flying around, you know, so you can tell how much fun you had, and it just kind of emulates through the screen. I guess my next question for you is, you know, in Scare Package 2, you know, you pay homage and parody the Saw franchise, you know, in the film's wraparound story. So can you talk a little bit about that creative process? Like, you know, how did you kind of go about, you know, this idea for the film's framework? And, you know, how did you guys go about, you know, building the traps that our lovely cast of characters find themselves in?
Yeah, no, thank you. It was not intentional to do a Saw thing. I mean, we knew, I originally thought there would just be like maybe one segment that was kind of like a Saw segment because we wanted mm-hmm. to focus on 90s and 2000s horror. Yeah. And I really, really love Saw 1 and Saw 2 in particular. Like those are two movies that I think are, you know, have meant a lot to me over the years. I think have really, really great twists in what's there. But I think as we were diving into all of that, it was, I was watching, I was basically prepping for Spiral that was going to come out. Yeah. And I was just watching all the movies, you know, just enjoying, you know, the craziness of what's going on. And I remember getting into like Saw 6, 7, Carrie Elway shows up at one point again. And I'm like, what the hell is going on in these movies? Like, I have no idea what's happening here. And that's when it clicked. And I was like, wait a second. This is what the horror sequel, this is what this is about. And the absurdity of trying to make, you know, that in H2O, Jamie Lee Curtis can cut off Michael Myers' head. And then we could be like, nope, it was just the ambulance driver. Right. Like in any, there's nothing, anything can happen. So I was like, okay, so let's use this framework. Let's like make it Saw traps within that. And now you get to come up with the dumbest, a scare package version of a Saw trap, which is just the most ridiculous thing possible. So all of that together in a blender. And I was like, this is our framework. This makes sense. Let's embrace the horror sequel in our horror sequel about horror sequels. And we were off and running.
Yeah. The I was dying at the bees on the head with the like the Wicker Man Nick Cage vibe. I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Fantastic. Hi, Jed. It's nice to meet you. I'm Alexis.
Hey, Alexis. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you. To kind of ask you another question, Aaron, is, you know, kind of going off, you know, the fun that you guys had, you know, the use of gore and guts in Scare Package 1 as well, but in Scare Package 2, you know, it's really, really fun, you know, especially like the acid vomiting between the characters. You know, what was that kind of like to film? And, you know, can you kind of talk about how you guys went about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, we take a lot of pride in our practical effects, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, even Jed can know, like when we were talking about it, it's like, right, we got to go for it, buddy. Like, you know, like I want the blood, I want this to be there, because right. You know, but I produce a lot of movies, and I think one of the things that works, like you're usually working overnight, you know, it's long hours, there's not a lot of money, but the thing that energizes a crew and the thing that gets them going, it's not looking at a tennis ball and a blue screen. It's when you do a practical gag and the whole crew's around and they're all clapping and they're like, oh my God, look at what's happening. And like the, yeah, like the, you know, when I have Kelly Maroney vomiting on my friend Jen Rader and turning her, you know, into a pile of goo and guts, everybody's watching this as Kelly's just getting way into it and just going to 100 and everybody's clapping and laughing. And it just becomes this really fun thing to pull off. And, you know, there are magic tricks, you know, you're trying to find a way to, how do you hide the seams and how do you make this stuff work? And I think for me, once I understand, especially that we want the comedy to play within that, especially like in the main story and how we want to do that. So it's like, how do you comedically use that to your advantage while also making someone go like, oh my God, like what are you doing at the same time? And I think if you could find that sweet spot, that's what's so fun about it. But yeah, I mean, I still have like projectile vomit that's like hit me, you know, when we were there. And there's so many stains on so many clothes and ceilings of blood that will never get out from the Scare Package movies that exist in the world and will never go away. Yeah.
I love it. And there's a question for both of you. How do you feel you find that balance between comedy and horror? Cause I know that's difficult for a lot of filmmakers, but it seems like you guys have hit that sweet spot. So what do you think is kind of the key to get to that spot?
I'll let you go, Jed.
Well, some of my favorite movies ever are comedy horrors, the Evil Dead movies. Sam Raimi is my hero. He is my favorite director. So I think he was the first person I saw to get that balance right, to make a scary movie, but also make it extremely entertaining, fun. And it basically set me on the road to want to make movies, because before, especially coming from the UK, I thought movies were just magical thing that came out of the ether. But to know that someone out there is doing something that just seems so fun and so scary just really inspired me. So I looked to those movies, where, especially with Scare Package, I looked to like Sam Raimi's movies, and I'm working with Sam Raimi on some stuff as well. So I can go direct to the source and yeah, get him to help me with some things. But yeah, you know, like the first Scare Package set the template for the rest of it. So there was lots of source material to kind of access.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's you know, when you think about a scare and you think about a joke, I think they're the same thing. It's a setup and a payoff, right? So I really think that horror and comedy can come together in a very nice way. You know, I think the only part that's actually kind of scary and scare package is Jed stuff. I think the rest of it is like mainly it's just comedy, and then there's a few things that are like, what the hell? But that's okay. And we like that. We like how we can kind of ebb and flow and find those that balance to kind of like keep you off kilter a little. But yeah, I mean, it's still either way, it's a setup and a payoff, right? So I think they're really two sides of the same coin. And I love that the world is embracing it more and more. And Jed's right. I mean, Sam is really who kind of pioneered. I mean, I have an Evil Dead tattoo, like the same thing. So it's like, you know, really a big part of just and I think the first Evil Dead's a comedy too, you know, like to me and what's there. And I think you just see that and you're like, wow, I didn't know that it could be like this, that I could have this like thrilling moment and then just be laughing and like, what is this set of emotions, you know, that you're dealing with? And I think it's really fun when you can, you know, thread that line and pull it off.
Awesome. And to kind of segue into a bit more about comedy, seeing Sam, your character again, was awesome. I was just dying at the flash, you know, the reveal and then the flashbacks of him kind of covertly at the funeral with like the John Kramer cape and, you know, gently eating snacks by the table while kind of giving this sinister look. So it was great to see him again. I love his character. You know, what's it like kind of bringing him back? And do you guys share, you know, the frustration that him and I guess by extension that Chad has, the annoyance of, you know, some people who kind of disregard horror or they don't appreciate it. How do you guys feel in that regard?
Oh, I'm about to get on my high horse here for a minute
I love it. Get on your high
because
horse.
yes. I mean, that is what so much of this is about is
Right.
I have a frustration. I will say I have a frustration with like horror fandom
Yeah.
and actually just fandom in general. So I will say that. And I think one of the things that we think is an important takeaway here is you want this to be like gateway, not gatekeeping, right? So it
Right.
can be niche, but I think it hopefully is getting people to be like, wait, what is that movie from? And then they go and they watch that movie, and now we've just evangelized. You know, Hellbound. Now somebody's watching Hellbound, you know, and I'm like, hell yeah, like this is cool. Like now somebody's watching Dream Warriors, you know, maybe now somebody's watching Three Men and a Baby and they're pausing it at the right spot because the movie's worth watching for at least that alone. So, you know, we're getting people to talk about different things, but with, you know, Sam's character and Byron, I mean, he's an improvisational actor. And so much of this was finding a through line. Like I was like, because he wasn't meant to be as creepy as he was. He wasn't written on the page to be so creepy in Scare Package One. But the way he peeked around the corner, and I'm like, dude, you're just fucking scaring me, man. Like, what is going on? He's like, oh, really? I'm so sorry. You're not gonna tell. I'm like, no. Like, go with it. Like, you're just so there's like an indignation that he had. So I was like, well, if someone's gonna be the John Kramer of this, quote unquote, kind of, you know, with like the hood and all this, I was like, it needs to be Sam. And what would he be mad about? He'd be mad about the idea of elevated horror. You know, there's no such thing as elevated comedy. There's no such thing as elevated drama. So why do we exist in a space where horror needs to be elevated? That's complete bullshit, right? It
Right.
doesn't make sense. And then these idea of like, oh, it's a B movie and all this stuff. And there's no, and there's an article that comes out, you know, every year about like horror's back and we finally cracked the code to horror mainstream. And it's just like, you guys aren't paying attention to what the people that Jed and I grew up watching have been doing this whole time, you know, and Sam. You know, and again, that line you talk about the bees, like that was me just texting my group of friends with Scare Package and saying, okay, I don't know what this is going to be because we were still writing it at very, very early stages. But I wrote down, you know, you called horror a bee movie. Well, the real horror is the 10,000 bees I just put inside you. And I was like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what we're going to do, but that makes me laugh. So that's going to be a segment for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, just elevated horror. Just saying those words out loud just make me feel dirty. And it's funny because when Host first came out, and it kind of did the general public start to like it outside of the horror fans, people started calling it elevated horror, and it was making me anxious. It was making me, you know, have cold sweats. Did I create something or help to create something that was elevated horror that people were calling elevated horror? So we had to, in some early interviews, quite specifically say, no, this is a horror movie. This is a horror movie that we would watch when we were kids. There is no, you know, elevated horror. That's just a lazy term for studio execs and journalists who don't understand the genre to make them feel better about liking something that's spooky, something that isn't considered art in their mind. And I always get suspicious of people who call it elevated horror because, for one, they shouldn't really be writing about a subject they don't know about. Should give it to somebody else. Real horror fans don't call it elevated horror. And it's just like when Jordan Peele was up for an Oscar for the Get Out screenplay, and everyone said, no, that's not horror, that's elevated horror, because they didn't want to give flowers to horror because it isn't considered art in their mind. And, you know, as soon as something like that breaks through, in their mind, it opens the door for all the kind of lowbrow horror that they believe in their mind is what represents the genre, but that's not the case at all. Horror is the most forward-thinking, experimental genre. All of our favorite filmmakers started with horror. Every single one of them. Spielberg started with horror. James Cameron started with horror. Christopher Nolan even started with horror. All of these amazing, incredible filmmakers that people hold up in the highest regard started with this genre. And there's a reason. It's because it's a genre that makes you believe. It's a genre that makes you want to make movies. So, it makes me incredibly angry when people try to put it down or compartmentalize this new kind of wave of horror as elevated horror. Because, for me, it's just there's two types of horror, good and bad, and both I'd watch both because I love terrible horror too.
Oh yeah, that's great. No, I couldn't agree more with what you're both saying. I mean, even as a film critic, you see it all over Twitter. You know, people in the community that I, you know, speak with, and people are like, you know, these larger publications are assigning journalists, you know, these screeners to watch, and they don't understand the genre. So they're, you know, they don't really know what they're talking about. So it seems like it's been quite a problem throughout the industry from what I'm seeing. But I just like felt it in my bones when, you know, they were talking about how frustrated they were that people disregard. I'm like, ooh, I feel that. So, you know, it's like, I feel that too.
Also, these publications know the horror community are, you know, they get triggered very easily. Like, we're part of the horror community, but we know what we are like. It can be toxic at times, but it can be wonderful at times. But right. The thing that we rally around the most is when somebody says something bad about horror as a genre, we unite and we attack. And you know, these magazines, these websites know that. So sometimes I think they do it on purpose to wolf whistle to kind of get us, you know, onto their site and talking about it.
Right.
And it works every time.
Well, I mean, even the end of Scare Package 2, there's a flashback to Josephine McAdam's character. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of trying to explain why people were taking, he said, I have to retcon everything. Cause I was like, oh shit, people want a sequel to this. Now I have to find a way to make this make sense. Right. And by the way, it still makes more sense than Saw 7. So
absolutely.
Just for what we're there. And again, and I love the movie. I'm saying it's fun, but right. Just for neither here nor there. But Josephine McAdam's moment, she's actually on a stream, like a kind of, you know, a Zoom stream thing or like a Twitch. And it's in the stream is Alien a horror movie? Right. And I remember that on Twitter. And like, I think Jed and I both like got into that debate. And I was like, this is silly. This is stupid. But we were baited into it. I can't help it. And it became a thing. But that frustrated me that we're asking whether Alien and Silence of the Lambs and Jaws are horror films. I'm like, yes, they're monster movies. These are a thing. This is absolutely a horror film. But that gets into the movie because that's part of, again, that indignation that Sam had and that frustration. I was like, well, let's make that the motivation behind someone who's this horror fan. And maybe this fan, because again, we talk about that, as Jed just said, the fandom can go in any fandom can go a different direction. Right. And I think we can go too far. So the idea that if you go, this is like way too far. And like, what would that mean? That's like, I'm going to put you in a horror movie. You don't respect horror. Now you will, because you're in my horror movie. And it's like, what the hell does that even mean? And, you know, and you get to have fun with that.
Yeah. And yet it creates the perfect scenario. Jed, I have a couple of questions for you. So I guess my first one, you know, would be, you know, the cast of, you know, Special Edition is one that you've, you know, obviously worked with before, Host, and which you wrote. You know, what was it like reuniting with that cast, and how did you guys know to come back together for this segment?
It's funny because they are my good friends, and most people know the story. I've known them for years and years and years, and I speak to them every single day. So yeah. For me, it's not, you know, reunited with them because I speak mm-hmm. to them all the time. It's just using the tools at my disposal.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, the path of least resistance. I know a bunch of great actors. Why wouldn't I use them?
Right.
And this is actually the first time since Host you see them all together. And actually the first time since Host you see them all together, like in the same place. Because in Host, they were never in the same place. So that's where the movie starts with, or the segment starts with all of them together in one image, which is great. But I love those ladies. They're my real good friends. I put them in everything. I just finished a project. I'm in post on a project where they're all in it again. Yeah, I think I'm just going to keep doing it forever. And, you know, some people might get sick of it, but, you know, I don't think I'm ever going to get sick of it.
No.
They're my friends. I mean, I'll just add more friends to the mix, and the more movies I do, and the bigger the movies are, yeah, it'll be more fun to just to see them play in a bigger toolbox. But yeah, it was fun. And when me and Aaron first started speaking, it was, you know, there wasn't any question about it. It was always going to be them. There was never any like, oh, we'll cast somebody else. It was always going to be them.
That's awesome. That's great. And something that, you know, I know Aaron had mentioned was yours is quite eerie. Your segment is it plays on a lot of creepiness. That shot of the figure in the window freaked me the hell out.
Oh, cool.
Love it. And I, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I got a lot of heavy influence. I feel like there was a lot of heavy influence in like J-horror. Is that kind of, you know, where were your influences coming from? I also felt like, you know, a little bit of Michael Haneke's Funny Games from the
Wow. Interesting.
That's,
I get
just,
it. Yeah.
It's just me projecting.
No, but, that's so yeah. I didn't even think of that, but you are 100% right. That is, it is very Funny Games. Yeah, it was actually Aaron who brought me the idea of J-horror. He wanted me to do something kind of based on, because this is about the 90s, right. About the ring, like a kind of a ring riff. And, you know, I absolutely love like J-horror, and
oh, yeah.
it didn't take me very long to say yes at all. But I think with those films, there's something very, you know, tangible about the horror, because it was all based on a physical object, a VHS. Mm-hmm. And so it's putting the horror into everyone's home, because in the late 90s when The Ring came out, everyone had a VCR, everyone had a VHS. So it was bringing the horror into your home. So it was kind of playing upon that. And instead of a VHS, we obviously use laser discs instead, just because it's the 90s and laser discs are very cool. And if you're going to have a haunted physical media, it might as well be something that's, you know, very Japanese in nature. So laser discs make sense, and the quality of laser discs are obviously much better than VHS, so it would make more sense that the kind of image would have more clarity and maybe have the possibility to transfer from the haunted disc to reality.
Awesome. Well, and that was because, and I had the actual, so I had the 3 Minute of Baby laser disc. So it was part of the implication here, because we watched it on VHS and we're like trying to pause it to see the ghost, you know, because it wasn't like a lot of the internet to really know what was going on. Like there was some stuff on the internet about it, but it wasn't, not like now, you know, you can find anything out that you want, and that's probably a bad thing. But with that, you know, we got a LaserDisc player, and I bought, you know, I got like Star Wars and Tombstone and all these, you know, and a bunch of movies that everybody made sense that I really liked at that time. Little Shop of Horrors, you know, The Burbs.
Oh, yeah.
And then 3 Minute Baby. And I was like, wait, what? And I was like, no, there's a ghost. And we put it on, you know, so my friends are over, and we were pausing like frame by frame by frame to see it, because that was the first time we could do that. So that was like, I was like, oh, Jeff, put it in. Let's lean into the laser disc, because I think this is a fun, it's like a personal thing, you know, as part of it too. But it makes sense. It fit in the aesthetic. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's almost too obvious to do a VHS version. I feel like most people would have probably done it on VHS, but, you know, I've never seen anything about laser discs in any film or any short film. So it just makes it cooler for me and more interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd also love to ask you about the design of our villain there with the
Oh,
blades for
yeah.
arms. Holy God.
Yeah.
Right in the back too. I'm like, holy shit, that looks
So
terrifying.
we've nicknamed him Stabby. He didn't really have a name, but with his nickname is Stabby because, obviously the swords for arms. Just sometimes your gut instinct like is the thing you should go with. And I was just like, when I was writing that, I was like, man, it would be really cool if this, because a kid ghost isn't scary in itself. Maybe a little bit, but what would make him scarier is if he had swords for arms. And I just that idea just wouldn't leave me. So, and I was looking at the image, the real image in Three Men and a Baby, and the folds of the curtains look like he's got long arms. So I just thought, okay, that's a conversation that the girls could have on screen. But also, what if he had sword for arms? Because just like the demon and host, which is he's a tulpa, and a tulpa is a creature that is manifested through groupthink. So in host, they do a seance, they're all thinking about this one thing, and it manifests it. So again, I guess these la same ladies, they have the ability to do it, I guess. They manifest this creature, and the way they describe it, that's what it looks like, which is really interesting to me. So yeah, I got Trevor Henderson, who's obviously a very famous illustrator of monstrous things. He did Siren Head and Cartoon Cat, which, if you are between the ages of 5 and 12 and on YouTube, you will know Trevor Henderson very well. Everyone who has kids that I know was like, "Can you introduce me to Trevor Henderson? My kid loves his stuff." So yeah, and I work with Trevor like a million times now. He always designs my creatures. It's awesome. So I said to Trevor, like I said, "Here's the script. Here's my idea behind why he is the way he is," and he designed him. And then I got Dan Martin, who is a creature special effects guy in the UK, to make him. And yeah, it's great. And people don't know this, but because the budget was real tight, we didn't really have a proper performer inside. We actually used the host girls. So every now and again, it's either Emma from Host or it's Caroline, and we just, depending on the scene, we just kind of put them in the suit. It's hilarious. But we needed someone who was quite small, so it couldn't be Hayley or Gemma because they're quite tall. But yeah, it's great because you can't really see in that costume as well. So you have to be like moved around. But yeah, and then like most great practical monsters, you have to have a little bit of CG on top to fully accentuate like his supernatural abilities. So he has glowing underneath his skin, just because it's cool.
Why not?
So we have this glowing under the skin, these particles kind of around him.
I love his drool too. When we added the drool, that's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was I loved, the shot of his blade just going straight through. I'm like, he really went for it. So it was awesome. Yeah, I just have a couple more questions for you guys. So I guess one of the ones that I would love to kind of ask here is, and I think it's really important personally, but what do you th what does physical media mean to you? How do you feel? Maybe this is a little too deep, but I would love to know your answers. But how can physical media kind of live on with the society that we're living in that's obsessed with advancing technology? And why do you think it's important that we keep physical media alive?
I go first, Jed. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big collector of physical media, and
Yeah.
I have a big VHS collection of out of print films that have never been transferred to DVD, Blu-ray. So for me, I'm almost like an archivist, and I don't want the films that people worked hard on, people who dedicated their lives to making a film 30, 40 years ago, and nobody's seen it. So I'm collecting these films and making sure people do see these things, and I talk about it in interviews, and I'm in pretty much every horror documentary from the last 18 months. I'm a talking head in, and I talk about these films. In fact, the most recent one is In Search of Darkness 3, which is all about kind of physical media and more obscure movies. And I think it's incredibly important that we don't lose these amazing stories from these amazing filmmakers. And a lot of companies have realized the beauty of having a tangible object. Because with horror, for me personally, we live in a world where everything is so accessible. Anything you want to watch ever, it's available on some kind of streaming service. But it almost loses a little bit of its personality that way. But if you have something tangible in your hand, the connection you have to that film is stronger. If you have a VHS in your hand of The Ring, for instance, and the film is about a tangible object, VHS that is haunted and cursed, then your connection to the film is grown 100 times, and it just makes it scary. And in fact, I put on a monthly basis a VHS night at a cinema in London where I project from a VCR onto the big screen, and the audience, I invite someone from the audience, usually someone who's younger, who's never really used a VCR before, and I just hand them the VHS and say, okay, work out what to do. And in front of a whole audience, they have to open up the case, put it into the VCR, figure out how to play it. It's hilarious every single time. But one of the amazing things about VHS as well is you can see the ghosts of everyone else who's played that VHS before, because the more something's been watched, the more it degrades. So when you like get something from a video shop back in the days, it was always the best parts of the film that starts to get scratchy and warped, and famously the leg crossing scene in Basic Instinct is the one where you're at 5 seconds away from that bit, and then suddenly your VHS goes all fuzzy because it's the bit everyone rewinds and plays and rewinds and plays and pauses. So watching a horror film, you know something cool is going to happen. There's going to be a cool kill, because it starts to get fuzzy and you're like, yeah, something great's going to happen now. So you don't get that now. Everything's so clear, and it's not just nostalgia as well. The aesthetic really lends itself to experiencing like a better horror experience for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something that I know scared me, you know, that like I was looking for, you know, Near Dark by Kathryn Bigelow. I'm like, I have not seen Near Dark yet. I don't know why, but I haven't. And so I'm like looking to stream, and it's like this movie is completely out of circulation on streaming. I'm like, that's terrifying, because that's not that old of a film. And so I luckily have, you know, have a VHS, and I'm starting out to collect, and I was able to buy it. I'm like, thank God. And then,
That's
yeah,
awesome. Yeah.
thank you, Shutter. You put it on Shutter. But yeah, that's awesome. Now, next time in London, I'll have to go.
Please, you're welcome.
Yeah, I need to go to that. I knew you did something like that, but we need to hang out proper in London. Like, that's not just Fright
Yes.
Fest.
Yes.
But I think the other thing about this too is, yes, I mean, look, what's going away, and we have the idea that HBO Max can just, you know, take something away at any point. And so it's the only way you know this is not gonna, you know, I have to physically lose this in
Right.
order for it to disappear. And there's something special about that. But it's also, as a kid, there is a nostalgia factor in the, especially in horror, because there's not, you don't hear tape trading, you know, as much about, you know, a drama, you know what I mean? And what's there, you hear tape trading about Evil Dead 2. You hear tape trading about Dead Alive, you know, and that's what was happening. And you're and we were doing this all the time. And I worked at a video store, surprise, surprise, growing up, you know, so that was a thing. And I would take these home, and I still keep physical media as well. And I just think there's something about, like, and also I love the special features, you
Yeah.
know, and that's a big thing. I'm really proud of the special features that we have on Scare Package that we packed. We've got a commentary track. I mean, we did an entire, you can rewatch the entire film through the lens of kind of like VH1's pop-up video from back in the
Oh yeah.
day, and
Oh
it
yeah.
pops up all the horror references. And I'm like, this is so much fun. Like, it's we're trying to reward you by seeing those. And you know, and every now and then you could find like one of the special features online, or maybe iTunes will have one little exclusive piece. But those commentary tracks, those behind the scenes, those making of featurettes, those deleted scenes, all of that, I love being able to look and as a filmmaker to kind of go through the process. And that's what physical media also was a part of as well. And I think we're hoping to try and continue that trend. And, you know, it's a Blu-ray. You can't pack as much on there as you would like. And I can only get one disc. But what we did pack on, I'm still very proud of.
Absolutely. It's just so refreshing. I mean, I'm 27. So luckily I was able to be in Blockbuster and Hollywood Video and all those amazing, those amazing stores. And I'm in Boston. We have one remaining video store and it's thankfully still operating, but it's just kind of scary that, you know, as you grow older, you're like, you know, you almost forget that those were a part of a film. When you'd rent a film, you know, when you rent a film, you'd see a film, you could watch bloopers, you could watch deleted scenes. And so it scares me sometimes. So I was quite curious to see what you guys thought about it. So thank you.
Funny thing is, like, I'm so jealous of anyone that worked in a video shop, because I applied to Blockbuster probably like 12 times. For some reason, no one gave me a job. I've applied in my teens to like four different Blockbusters. And not one of them would give me a job. And I would think I'm the prime candidate for a job in Blockbuster, because there'd be no customer who would come in and ask a question about a film that I would know the answer to. But I don't know. Hopefully I'm better in interviews now. Right?
Maybe they thought
it must have been terrible.
Maybe they thought that you were going to just watch movies the whole time. They're like, we don't trust this guy. He's going to take all our movies. He's going to watch all of them. I mean, I worked at a Blockbuster, but the one that I was at, that was a short period of time. And then it was Family Video. The Family Video is where I was at for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And Cameron, my co-creator of this, he also worked at, oh God, I can't remember what his was. He might've been Hollywood Video.
Yeah.
He might've been Hollywood Video. Yeah. So, but Family Video was great because there was a horror section that was kind of like, you had to go to the corner and there was this whole thing. And that was like my lair, you know, mm-hmm. And I would go in there and just, and I would move around. I could make up the order I want. Then I had my own shelf, you know, that was there. And that was definitely a really special, thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very jealous. Jed, I did hear that they're relaunching Blockbuster. I bet they would happily take you.
Yeah, maybe I'll do it. But I've been looking into setting up a workspace specifically for horror writers in London that is themed around like an old video store. So there'll be videos everywhere, but it's more kind of a workspace specifically for horror, because it's very... Right. You know, it's hard to make a horror in the UK, so I'm trying to set one up. I've got some people interested in investing, so yeah, you never know. It may spawn a franchise potentially.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. And I just want to ask you guys one more question. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time. This is quite a basic question, but I would just love to know, what in horror scares you the most? What is something that will constantly get you no matter what movie you're watching?
Aliens. I'm sorry. It's such an easy answer for me. It's the gray, the big eye gray aliens. And the reason, so, you know, I'm an atheist, I'm agnostic. I don't believe in anything supernatural and any of that. So I'm a skeptic. So for the rest, and I've also been on so many sets and seen so many movies that, like, I know how the sauce is made. Right. So I kind of get it. Or the sausage is made. I guess either was fine, but either way, I know how it's made. And I get it. But aliens, when the smartest people in the world have said statistically that there are aliens, I'm like, oh my God, that means they really are out there. And I watched a movie when I was a kid called Communion. It's a great book as well. But there's this scene with basically Christopher Walken, and he's on this bed and he wakes up and there's these aliens and their hands are like hovering over him, these long skinny arms, and they're the gray aliens, as you call them, which is the big head, the big black eyes. And like, I was out. I totally tapped out. I'm like, I cannot do this. So that is, nothing else scares me. Like, literally nothing scares me. I don't think much scares Jed either, but really, aliens, yeah. Like that shit. Yeah.
I mean, jumping off the back of that, found footage films in general affects me more than the normal movies, because for me to incite fear in anyone, you need to you need to make things as real as possible, because we live in a world where people know how films are made. People know there's a director, there's a crew, there's cameras, there's lights. And that, for me, takes away some of the fear. But when it's found footage, you know you are closer to the danger, because it's only you and you know the protagonist going into this dark house, going into this basement. And so found footage films bring me one step closer to be scared, but the kind of films that scare me the most are the ones that are real subtle and really lull you into the sense that what you're seeing is real. So something like Lake Mungo, for instance, which is a faux documentary about some parents who've lost their daughter, that feels so much like a real documentary. When spooky things start to happen, that scared me. I would say that film scared me. And then when I was a kid, it was Ghost Watch, the 1992 BBC Halloween special, because again, you are told that this is a real situation. It's a live TV show hosted by people that you see on TV all the time, and spooky stuff starts to happen. And it feels like an institution like the BBC, something's wrong, because you know they are the people you're meant to trust, and all of a sudden something's gone wrong. There is a ghost. So for me, found footage is the only thing that it brings me closer to being scared. But you know, if I'm not really scared of any monster. I would kick a vampire in the head, no problem. Like there's nothing that would scare me. People scare me loads more
Yeah,
than
that's
any
fair.
other.
That's fair. Yeah, that's
That's true. Yeah.
accurate. Yeah, I think I'm in Aaron's wheelhouse where, yeah, aliens and me don't mix. So yeah, I feel you there.
Because they could be real. That's the thing. Like, that's the
Yes.
only
Yeah.
one. Like, I don't believe. And Jed, by the way, there's a movie coming out soon with David Desmarais called Late Night with the Devil that is very influenced by Ghost Watch.
Oh,
So
wow,
it's it, it
cool.
doesn't it doesn't have quite the effectiveness in regards to it's not airing on like the BBC. So you're like, what is this? It doesn't have that kind of War of the Worlds, aspect to it, and like the radio play and like what happened with that. That's so cool. But it is that same kind of concept, and it's really great. I saw it
Amazing.
on
Okay.
SoFi. Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah,
great. I can't
perfect.
wait.
I saw that advertised. That looks very, he's fantastic too. So I'm sure it will
He's so
be.
good. He's
Yeah,
so
he's
good.
very
Yeah.
good. But you guys, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Alexis. Really
Of
good to meet
course.
you as well.
It's great to
Yeah.
meet you.
Goodness. Yeah. It means so much. And Downright Creepy has been so great and over the years. And I just really appreciate the support and thank you. And yeah, more people talk about it, there's a chance we can have a third one. So yeah. So thank you so much.
I
Yeah.
hope so. I can't wait to see Chad again.
Yeah. Maybe. Who knows?
Who
Yeah.
knows?
But thank
Thank
you
you
so
so
much.
much.
I want to say thank you so much to Aaron and Jed for taking the time to chat about their film, Scare Package 2, Rad Chad's Revenge, out on Blu-ray right now. You can pick it up. And like I said, Paper Street Productions is absolutely tearing it up with some new films, Trim Season, The Artifice Girl, caught those at South By and at Panic Fest. And they were just crowd pleasers, I feel like. So definitely check those out too. They'll be out. They're on a festival run right now, but they'll be out soon. So thank you so much for listening to the Creepcast. You're on downrightcreepy.com.